Welcome to the Organizational Transformation Kung Fu Podcast with your hosts, Sandy Varecchia and Jennifer Long.
Welcome to our podcast, Organizational Transformation Kung Fu, or OT Kung Fu as we like to call it. I'm Sandy Varecchia, podcasting from my home office in Toronto, Canada, and I'm joined virtually by Jen Long, who's in her home office in Denver, Colorado. For those of you who listen to our podcasts, you know that we call it OT Kung Fu because the art of Kung Fu requires patience, energy, and time to complete. And we believe that organizational change or transformation also takes time to master and the time to complete. And it takes the patience for the changes to take root. We're now here together in the midst of pandemic, and organizations wouldn't have had that framework in place in order to move to that virtual work environment. So today, we're going to talk about things that organizations can do to actually make that change happen and happen well.
Hi, Jen Long here in my remote office in Denver, Colorado, and I'm excited to be working with Sandy today and help you guys out on some virtual teaming information because we have all become virtual team members in a very short period of time. And I'm excited to introduce you to my friend, Trina Hofling, who is an expert on virtual teaming. Trina is an organizational development and transformational change consultant. She's a graduate school professor and master teacher, strategic facilitator, leadership coach, and virtual team collaboration expert. This is why we love Trina. Mm-hmm. She's also author of a book called Working Virtually, Managing People and Organizations for Virtual Success. And she's got a second edition out on that just recently. She's also contributing writer for the handbook of high-performance virtual teams. And she's a longtime professional speaker and trainer. Hi, Trina. Thanks for doing the podcast.
Hey, it's great to be here, Jen. Just a clarification, the second edition has a different second name. It's Transforming the Mobile Workplace. So Working Virtually, Transforming the Mobile Workplace.
Oh,
the first edition is just not a good book anymore. Go for the current one.
Go for the current one. Please get the second edition. I actually have both copies and I was using it recently. Very good. Well, so Sandy, you want to kick us off into what Trina can help us understand in our podcast to assist these folks?
Absolutely. So we're really looking at how to help our listeners be better working remotely. So the first question that I think we have for you, Trina, is what's the difference between a remote workforce and a virtual team? Is there a difference? Because those terms get tossed around a lot.
You know, that is a great question. I have been on a lot of interviews in the last couple of weeks, you can guess, and you're the first person to ask that question. There are certain terms you can use interchangeably. Virtual worker, virtual team member, remote worker, all of those are interchangeable. But there is a difference between a virtual worker and a virtual team member. And the difference is, do those employees who are working virtually need to depend on each other to get the work done? Are they co-workers who are in a pretty independent team, like in a call center environment, usually, for example? Or are they team members that need to work together to deliver their final product or service to their customer? And so I kind of think of it as a difference between a hen house and, say, a jazz symphony orchestra. The orchestra is a team.
Right.
The hen house is a work group. And you would manage them differently. There are some things that you need to know about how to engage the worker rather than the team member that's a little different. Right. We can talk about that in a minute if you like.
Great. That's a great analogy. Would never have thought to actually look at those two in the same sentence. That's awesome.
Right. Now I've got
In a business, we use every employee as a team member, right? Whether they have to engage with others to get the work done or not, because it's collaborative, it's our cultural norms. Mm-hmm. But the truth of the matter is, when we're moving suddenly to this environment, you really have to ask, how much do the team members need to work together to get the job done? And how much am I, as the virtual manager, the conduit of the work? And it makes a difference in your workflows.
Right.
So in your work, you state that a team leader is the most important when working virtually. Can you expand a little on that perspective?
Yes, I can. The virtual manager is sort of the Oreo, the cream in the Oreo cookie, no matter what. You know, they're the primary connector of the workforce to the organization, culturally, operationally, in many ways. But when you're co-located, there are many other ways, physically and mentally and emotionally, that you become part of the organization, whether your manager is your primary contact or not. When you move to a virtual work environment, especially suddenly, like so many people have just done, that manager is your major connection with the organization, your major purpose giver, your major clarifier, your major contact. It doesn't remain that way, but at least at first, as people are trying to figure this out, that manager is a critical, critical person to decide whether or not that employee can succeed.
So that's when I was reading in your book, the virtual manager is the key influencer of work satisfaction, employee retention. That really comes into play.
Here. And that's true across the board, whether you're virtual or not. You take people away from their teammates and they're suddenly looking at their own four walls and wondering if they need to listen to that kid screaming in the other room. You know, they need your they need that manager to bring people together and recreate that connection to the workplace differently.
Right. So can I ask you then, Trina, what are the top skills or competencies that a virtual leader need to be successful?
Oh, shoot. I could open my book and tell you, but off the top of my head, what I think are the most important is good communication skills, written and oral. You don't have to be an extrovert to be a good virtual manager. That's probably a myth that we should just dispel right now. Mm-hmm. But you have to care about your team members and be willing to reach out to them, not as big brother or big sister oversight, but as just a human to human to connect. So that authenticity, that caring about your team enough to put the time and attention to connecting on purpose into it. I would say those are the big things, you know, interpersonal skills, caring. The other one is to be able to really be clear and help the team be clear with each other so that you can start establishing trust in a different way in this new world. And a leader that you trust can help a team do that a lot better and faster than a leader that is pretty hands-off and disconnected from the team.
Right.
Does that answer your question?
Yeah, no, it's great. Thank you.
Good, good. So that's the leader side of it. So let me ask you about the virtual or the remote worker as well, right? So the team player. What are they experiencing coming into this cold, maybe? And what should managers and leaders be paying attention to or worried about from that perspective?
How do we manage panic and fear?
Panic and fear. Panic and fear in isolation.
But I mean, I'm kidding, but I'm kind of serious about the panic and fear part. Because some people are more comfortable using the collaborative and digital tools than others. And if, let's just assume that some of your team is not as comfortable because they've been co-located. Yet we all have to use shared drives and get on video conferencing once in a while because life is the way it is. But to do all your work that way is different. So I think workers, virtual professionals who can get some fun time learning to use the skills, the tools, you know, like doing a collaborative brainstorm on a whiteboard. Let's practice playing with our annotation tools. Simple things like that to get people's confidence and comfort up so they can go back to focusing on the work they're there to do instead of how they're having to do it. That would be one thing they're facing. That the kind of that panic and fear piece is we're forced to use the tools. About last year sometime, I chose to only take my iPad with me on a business trip so that it forced me to learn how to use the darn thing.
I've done that.
Because I'm in an LMS that has an app in iPad, but I just never used it. So in a way, it was an opportunity to force me to get good at something I needed to learn anyway. The second thing I would say for the team members is do it together as a group. You're not on your own. Let's be silly. Let's do some fun things. Let's make some mistakes so that we can get over all of that humps, if you will, of the environment. And you're going to make mistakes. I mean, you will, no matter who you are, boss, employee, peer-led team, you will have miscommunications. Just plan on them and make an agreement to assume positive intent and talk about it.
Yeah. You know,
pick up the phone instead of stewing for 3 days. Write a draft email and put it away and then read it later to say, was I overreacting? Little things like that really show up in a virtual environment, but you can hide it from each other, but you're still steaming inside. So as an employee, don't assume somebody's out to get you. Assume positive intent, speak up and clarify the communication, because flat writing, which is a lot of how we communicate virtually.
It's not the whole message. It's just the text.
That's right. That's right. You know, I'm listening to you, Trina, and I think assuming a positive intent is something that we come across all the time, right? And I think probably all of our podcasts, we've actually talked about that in some way, shape, or form. And it's so incredibly important. And do you have any suggestions on how a manager can lead a team to get to that point?
Well, I have a three-path process for being a high-performance virtual team leader or member. And in the first of the three paths, it's about developing your team. And it's not necessarily developing their skills to be able to do the job. It's developing their skills and their competencies and our agreements to be able to do our job in this environment. So negotiating team agreements, communication protocols, what are the meeting rhythms and flows that will work for us as a team, and have the team leader facilitate and negotiate those agreements. Because once those are in place, then you can start trusting that we know what we're doing. We know we're going to be talking on Tuesday mornings at 8 o'clock every week, no matter what. We know we're going to be having a one-on-one with our team leader at some point during the week to be scheduled. You know, just give people some comfort around how we're going to come together formally and officially. That helps a lot. Now, bring me back to the question, because I think I may have taken myself off on a tangent.
No, you're right on the path. Because the thing I was going to ask about is, talk a little bit more about the threefold path model and how that lays out. If you can sort of give from an audio perspective, what that looks like.
Yeah. Well, it's easy to do. You know, I've been doing, I wrote my first remote management training program in 1984 before I knew about the internet. So I've been kind of in this really strange with engineers, right? At a defense DOD contractor. Actually.
Oh, awesome.
Where St. Louis engineers were managing Chinese engineers, and they did it all by telephone. So I've been at this a long time. I got really serious about it in the mid 90s and started doing a lot of virtual management and virtual team training. And this model kind of evolved. And the goal, of course, is always to make it pretty simple. And the threefold path, it comes from Buddhist tradition, the Tao tradition, of realizing that it's not a linear path. It's kind of this integrated way of coming together and collaborating. So the first path is very simple. It's develop your team. You know, who's going to be on your team, help them get to know each other, negotiate the agreements like we talked about a few minutes ago. And there are some simple processes for doing that. And then the second path is to support your team. And that is a shared responsibility with the manager and the team members. And that's the care and the feeding of communicating project scope changes. One of the biggest disappointing findings right now today, when you ask virtual employees before this crisis, is that 70-some percent, I may not get that number exactly right, but it's exceedingly high, of virtual team members say that they feel they are not trusted and that they're left out of critical communications that impact their ability to do the job.
Wow, so that's high.
It's huge. Well, and then another podcast sometime, we can talk about unconscious bias and distance bias and why that is, because we think like a caveman, you know, we're pretty simple creatures, and we tend to trust those people we see and are next to us because they can help us or hurt us. Right. Somebody who's far away can't, right? They're not as dangerous or as helpful because they're not there. Well, it's inaccurate in today's world, but our brain still works the same way. So we have to learn to do that differently. And remember, you've got team members out there that need to be informed about the project scope change. If you're not already using some kind of simple task or project management tool, start.
Right.
Right.
You can't afford to have 100% of your team being left out of information, because we're all virtual now.
Right.
So it's an opportunity to get into better habits, be more intentionally inclusive.
Right. And nothing like a good crisis to help you grow.
Right. So is it in?
If I could just interrupt, and the team members too have the responsibility to speak up and ask. It's not all on the manager.
Right.
So that's the developing of the team part. It's like, how do we just keep each other engaged, informed, supported? Because the other risk, and I want to go back to a much earlier question, the other really big experience that a lot of virtual employees are having in this crisis is they're lonely, they're scared, mm-hmm. and loneliness in the workplace has become an epidemic. HBR wrote an article about it 2 years ago, and that's not even counting the virtuality piece. So you add all of us being isolated and people like me who don't have kids, I'm sharing my house with two cats. After a while, it's like, do I talk to myself? So that's a new way of supporting your team that's unusual right now, but it can help the team bond faster. And right. So develop your team, support your team. And the third path is just deliver results, because we right. all want to be part of a successful team. And if we deliver our results, then we can learn to work together with Dixie cups and string if we have to.
Exactly. So you know, on that support thing and painting the pandemic part of that into it, is there any recommendations you've got specifically relative to being sensitive to just all the other, because working virtually and being in the environment on your own is one thing, but being isolated with all the other stuff that's going on, kids at home,
right.
Going to the grocery store and freaking out about that, leaving the house, right?
Yeah.
Is there something managers and leaders can be cognizant of or extra steps they maybe need to be taking relative to the support aspect?
You know, a lot, there are many things. Be creative. I mean, think outside of the box. We can do many things. I'm invited to 2 virtual happy hours tonight.
Sweet. Right? I did that last night.
I did too.
So, sign up for a free online webinar on using Zoom more effectively. And let's all let somebody else teach us together. You know, just really creative things like that. Something that we used to do when I had a telecommuting company in the 90s, and some of us were co-located and some of us were virtual. The sales team was spread out throughout the nation. And we would, we always ate M&Ms as a team in the Denver office. And the people calling in was like, what's that noise? Because they were M&Ms in a big glass bowl. I mean, it was so rude of us, right? So rather than stopping eating M&Ms, we just started mailing out packets of hard boxed M&Ms to all the team members as a way that we could share that. We could have a virtual pizza party. Maybe send out Clorox wipe containers to the team.
If you could find them,
right? No. Call that guy in Tennessee for the hand sanitizer.
Now, if you deliver toilet paper to me, you've got me for life right now. So just, you know, be creative and fun and realize even in a non-crisis environment, when you are virtual, you need to make time to have some fun together. Yeah. You know, do a virtual tour on camera. Here's my office. Here's my bookshelves. You know, who shares these books? You know, little things like that that are not tasky, mm-hmm. but are important right now. Right. What do you recommend to homeschool your kids? Anybody got a tip for entertaining them when you have to be in a 45-minute meeting with a client? You can't be interrupted. You know, pool your resources.
Yeah.
Good.
So path 1 and 2, Trina, are all about kind of the care and feeding of the team. And path 3 is really where the rubber hits the road. Mm-hmm. So what advice do you have for a manager who's just been thrust into this new virtual work environment where they've never done it before? How do they hold people accountable? How do they manage results? What do they need to do differently?
Well, it's a great question. First of all, if you're managing by results now, you'll be managing by results virtually. So it's an easier transition. That's the question I've been hearing since 1984. How do I know they're really working? Yeah. The data suggests they're working even harder because you don't have those built-in stops and breaks when you don't have interruptions. But never mind, let's just deal with the doubt and the question of it. My question back is, how do you know they're working now? Tell me. Do you have a results and management process in place? Do you have a performance? Do you do coaching sessions? How do you observe behavior? You know, what do you do now? And if it's managing by sight, you're not, I won't say this to somebody because it's not kind, but you're not managing results right now. You're managing by sight. That's a whole different thing. And
so what I'm hearing is, if you suck at it when you were at work, you're really going to suck at it now.
You know the old fortune cookie at the end of your meal, and you open it, and I don't know if you guys played this game, but it's like whatever it said, you read out loud, and then you added the words "in bed" at the end.
Well,
it's kind of the same thing with management skills. How do you manage now? And then just add the word virtually at the end.
Right.
If you are a site manager, that's going to be a bigger transition for you. And so rather than making you wrong, because we don't have time to train you right now.
Right.
Have daily stand-ups with everybody on your team. Have a daily team stand-up if you need to, or how often.
So more frequent communication.
Yes.
Well, and as the accountability expert on the call here, I will tell you, it's all communication skills, right? It's all communication skills. And if they're out of sight and you're not sure if they're working, pick up the phone. Have a conversation, get an understanding of what's going on. And what you'll find is over time, fewer phone calls will be needed.
Right.
But initially, it's how often and frequently you're contacting people to really find out where things are.
Watch for areas where the disconnects are happening that may not have shown up before. Like let's say there's a handoff within your team or from your team to another department. Because that's part of delivering results too, is breaking down those silos virtually. Because you may have to find new ways to reach out to the other team members, your internal customers.
Right.
So it is all about communication and following through. But the manager can also kind of be virtually watching, especially if you do have a task management system, or you do see a trend of the same complaint, the same times you need to step in. Well, there's a breakdown there. So who's involved? And instead of making it a problem, make it an opportunity to improve our processes, because this environment is helping us show our weak spots.
Right. Leverage your platforms. Talk about, are they working? Are they not? Are you got them set up for how you want to work? Right.
And then you get the relevant parties, the stakeholders in the room, instead of we're going to figure out what needs to do and then tell them how they need to do it. Get everybody in the virtual room together. One of the great things about Zoom, which is what we're using right now, is you can send people into breakouts. They can do little activities, come back. I mean, you can do a lot.
Yes, you can.
And people can admit when things aren't working, because it's not the old environment. So it doesn't mean something's broken.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, I kind of find it gives people permission to admit things they've been kind of jerry-rigging or kludging for a long time. And now it's just showing up faster because the virtual environment makes that possible. So it really can work for the long-term good of the team.
Right. And it goes back to building that trust again, right? Having those initial conversations, or allowing for those conversations to continue as we go along. Because if you feel like somebody's not doing their job, or if I feel like a coworker's not working as much, if we've got those norms in place that say we're going to check in 3 times a day. It's not like it's somebody looking in on you, checking in on you from a negative standpoint, but it's
a touch point rather than.
Yes. Yeah.
It is all in how you frame it and how you really do it. I mean,
Well, so this brings me up. So Sandy said the magic word, right? There's a couple of key concepts that you have in your book, and there's one I want to ask you about, which is structured trust. What is that, and how do leaders do that?
Okay, so let's go back to the first path of developing your team, which starts with role clarification and team agreements and communication protocols. When you structure your trust, you're actually doing that when you create these shared and negotiated team agreements. We agree to check in every day. We agree to keep the task management platform current, because we're not seeing each other in the cafeteria at lunch anymore. We agree to have one brown bag learning lunch every other week. You know, what are the things that we commit to? And you document it, you write it down, and you post it on your team website, create some way that you can have a team dashboard to find each other, even if it's a private Facebook page or a private LinkedIn page, if you have nothing else to work with, or a Slack group or whatever. That's a way you're structuring trust, because in a virtual environment, even in today's work world, we need to establish swift trust right away, because so much of our work are temporary teams with temporary team members. We know we're going to be working together for 6 weeks, 6 months, 6 years, but it's not a forever thing. And so we're learning societally how to establish swift trust. You know, start with that trust cup full. And if the team, after setting these agreements and protocols, continue to meet those agreements, well, that trust cup stays full.
Right.
If a few team members fall off, well, that's an opportunity to re-meet. Say, okay, so we've got a couple of protocols that really aren't working so well. How do we course correct? What do we need to improve? Because my guess is if you've never worked virtually, you're not going to get it right the first time. So build that into it. And all of that helps structure trust and give people an opportunity to have a voice and have responsibility for keeping that trust going.
Yep.
All of that is happening in the first path. And then you follow through with it in the second path of develop of supporting your team and showing up and doing what you said you were going to do. And if something changes and you can't, you communicate far enough ahead of time so the team can make other arrangements. And that's the same. The only difference is in a virtual environment, you have to start with the trust cup full. And the best way to do that is structuring it with agreements and documentation and an understanding that we're going to revisit this in 2 weeks to see what's working for everybody and what we need to adjust a little bit until we get closer to what's a win-win for everybody.
Cool. Right.
Got and then going outside of your team too, if you have to interact with other people and break down silos, but start with your own core.
Nice. Great. Good.
So do you have a list of virtual team leads best practices that you can share with us?
Everything I've been saying.
You should be narrow writing this all down.
Top five.
Number one is be honest and authentic, because the team leaders are probably even more terrified to look stupid using the tools wrong or bad. I teach on Zoom every week for the University of Southern California. And when the tool doesn't work fast enough for me, I'm still like a doe in headlights because I'm a boomer. You know, it's like, if it doesn't work, what am I going to do? I mean, I go through this little internal crisis every time a tool doesn't immediately load the way I want it to. I have to breathe, calm down, laugh at myself because I'm on camera while they're watching me panic, and just be authentic. I mean, people are very tolerant of real people. As long as we admit that we're learning it, we're not doing everything right. So that would be the first thing. The second thing I would say would be to connect on purpose, on task, and on relationship. Don't, you know, it's common for certain types of teams, like you mentioned, Jen, you work a lot with the DOD, you know, engineering types. Don't put a lot of time and attention to the relationship. It's just like, virtually, you need to do something. Even it's like, bring 3 books to our next meeting that have made a difference in your professional life. You know, if it needs to be practical, make it practical, but spend time on the relationships and getting to know each other, especially if you don't already.
Right.
And humanize the workspace until you can get back to the cafeteria and going out to lunch together and what you used to do.
Right.
So those are that's the second thing. And if I were to add a third, I would say just communicate more than you think you need to at first until everybody's kind of got their groove back.
Right. Because I sort of feel like in the conversations I've been having with clients, the coaching conversations, who are suddenly finding themselves in the remote place, struggling a little bit with the clarity on the expectation.
Yeah.
Right. So.
There is a lesson learned that I've gotten over the last 25 or 30 years that I find that managers, and I encouraged managers to do, that was a mistake. And it kind of goes back to that hen house versus the orchestra. I mean, if it's an orchestra, you'll figure it out. You've got to. But if you're managing a hen house, one that you can kind of set it up where people are on their own, it's easier to manage that way virtually, we think. But what I have found over the many years is that the employees get really disconnected from the office and from the workplace, and it puts a lot more pressure on the manager to be that person to hold hands. So you don't have to change the way work gets done to make it more complicated, but build in that social time and that social connection. Okay, what was your worst call of the week? Let's say it's a call center employee. What was your best call? You know, find ways for people to connect and talk to each other without you having to be the only one they do it through.
All right. So break down the virtual isolation that could.
Well, exactly. Because you really don't want to, people can get very depressed in this environment.
Mm-hmm.
And that it's, really hard to show up at work and put that extra effort into it when you're struggling on every level. So anything that, the team and the manager can do to keep them connected, even if they don't have to be for work, is probably
right. But to connect them anyway, just mm-hmm. to touch base and, you know, see how much toilet paper you have left.
Exactly. Right. So far, I probably win the prize. I hoard it anyway.
Yeah, I'm finding that out, that there's a few friends I have who are like, yeah, I don't want to tell you how much toilet paper I have because I've been doing that for a long time.
I live 30 miles from a grocery store, well, 25 miles from a grocery store up in the mountains. And so for me, if I don't have 34 rolls of toilet paper, I get scared.
Oh my gosh. That's
crazy. So well, great.
Yeah. Toilet paper and eggs and coffee. Those are my three have to. Right? It's like, I got to go grocery shopping. I'm almost out of eggs.
Yeah. Before we wrap up, I'm just curious, Trina, what do you think this whole pandemic thrust into working virtually is going to do for our workforces going forward?
If we can really support each other through this and it doesn't become a long-term thing, I think it will give all of us, organizational leaders from the C-suite all the way down, more choice about working in the environment that is best suited for the work I need to do today. Mm. And I think a lot of, I hope, I pray that a lot of managers and C-suite leaders who are really hesitant to do this will see that it's not so bad. And I think that we'll find out when do we want to come together, that it really is better that way, and where can we do this just as well, a lot less expensively, on Zoom or whatever our collaboration tool happens to be.
Right.
I really do. We can turn this into an expansion of the options if we do it right.
Right. For all those companies who are afraid to really explore flex time, right? This right. might be a great experiment, the great experiment they weren't expecting to have.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Excellent.
Well, great. Well, Trina, thanks so much for taking the time to be with Sandy and I today, because I think that this information is really critical and timely for people who are out there doing this for the very first time. So thanks again for making the time. And as we post this out to you guys, we're going to include Trina's website on the virtual workplace, right?
Well,
she's got Virtual Workplace University.
Yeah, Virtual Workplace University is a part of the Smart Workplace, which is our thought leadership. So you can access the university through the smartworkplace.com.
And I think you also have an assessment, a self-assessment?
There are many. Yes, our knowledge set, the Smart Workplace is a thought leadership website that my partner in Minnesota and I put together. We've both got 30 plus years of experience helping expand the flexible workspace and the telecommuting workspace and so on. And so we just put our thoughts together, and the Knowledge Center at thesmartworkplace.com is loaded with free assessments at the organization, team leader, and individual level, as well as a couple of chapters from my book and a lot of free resources that will be helpful for people who need help right now.
Excellent.
So there you have it, thesmartworkplace.com, people. That's where you need to go next if this wasn't enough.
So all thank right. you so much, Trina. We really appreciate your time today. It was great. I've learned a lot for sure.
I hope it helps somebody.
All right. Thanks again. And we'll talk to you guys soon.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening. And please visit Sandy's website at satoriconsultinginc.ca. That's SATORI consulting INC.ca, and Jen's website at managementpossible.com. Thanks again.